Okay. Call up the next summary. Okay, the next petition is on Zostera japonica. This is the non-native eelgrass proposal. And Lisa Venerosa, you're listed as the person who will help us walk through this one.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. This is Lisa. I'm also here with Randy Carman, who leads our nearshore team in the Habitat Program, who may be offering additional information on this briefing. So you have in front of you a petition from a few constituents, including Rob Cavanaugh, L. Hendricks, W. Weiler, J. Thornton, F. Cohen, and the Coalition to Protect Puget Sound. Their petition is asking for two actions. One is to protect Zostera japonica, the Japanese eelgrass, from the toxic herbicide imazamox, and secondly, to list that eelgrass on our agency's priority habitat and species list. Technically, this petition to our agency for a rule change doesn't apply to us for two reasons. One, the use of imazamox is not within our regulatory authority, and two, our priority habitat and species tool is not a regulatory tool, but it serves for other regulatory agencies to adopt rules and ordinances. So what these petitioners are asking is for us to include in our priority habitat and species list a non-native eelgrass in the with the intention of influencing other governmental entities who would then use our protection guideline to direct their regulatory actions. Just to be a little more explanatory on that note, the Department of Agriculture's Noxious Weed Control Board is the entity that actually manages noxious weeds in the state, and that board has listed Zostera japonica as a Class C noxious weed. That classification allows for its removal but doesn't require it. As a result of that listing, the Department of Ecology is responding to an application from Willapa Bay for the use of the herbicide imazamox to apply to Zostera japonica in that bay, exclusively in that bay. Our priority habitat and species list always has only protected native marine vegetation. What we did not do is specify the non-native species, but we did list eelgrass species in general with an umbrella statement that our tool is directed at protecting only native vegetation. So that's a little bit of background to help you in your thinking as we walk through this. The petitioners listed eight different reasons to justify their petition to you, and those are listed on your petition and on this summary briefing sheet. The responses that I'll be providing to you for these eight reasons to petition for this listing, I'm combining the first and the fifth reason. So the first one is that the Zostera japonica is protected by other governmental entities, and the fifth one is that the Shoreline Management Act protects both native and non-native eelgrasses. In my response, I will be combining those two. Their second reason is they're stating there's virtually no difference in functions between native and non-native eelgrasses. The third is there are claims of economic losses by the aquaculture industry, specifically shellfish industry, that the petitioners are claiming is unsubstantiated. And then we move down to the seventh one. The listing by the State Noxious Weed Control Board, according to the petitioners, was not based on science, but was a political decision. And lastly, the petitioners state that there is scientific evidence that shows Zostera japonica serves an important role in the ecosystem and therefore should be protected. So a couple of facts about what we do know about this non-native eelgrass. It is native to Asia. It is not native to the West Coast, and there's a few citations to substantiate that information on the summary sheet. It's got a fairly broad distribution across the West Coast, North America, from British Columbia to Humboldt Bay. As I said, it's listed as a Class C noxious weed in Washington. Again, that classification does not require its removal, but it allows for it. And the classification is designated when a non-native invasive species is so prolific that it's presumed to be difficult to control. So there's not a requirement, but there's an allowance. Unlike California, where this same species is classified as a Class A, which it is required to remove it. And the reason for that classification is Zostera japonica has not taken hold in California to the degree it has in areas like Willapa Bay, so they're trying to get rid of it before it becomes a problem. Some interesting facts on its expansion in Willapa Bay. In 1997, there was an estimated 6,700 acres of Zostera japonica. 10 years later, in 2007, that area almost doubled to over 12,000 acres. And then 5 years later, in 2012, another approximately 50% increase up to 18,000 acres. In Oregon, in the lower Yaquina estuary, Japanese eelgrass has had about a 400% increase between 1998 and 2007. So it is a very prolific plant due to its seed production. It's difficult to control. It colonizes in the upper tidal zone, a little bit higher than native eelgrass. And it's been shown to have a negative impact on shellfish industry in Willapa Bay. So in providing specific responses to the petitioner's 8 bullets, again, combining 1 in 5 that other regulatory and governmental entities are protecting Zostera japonica, the Department of Ecology, who administers the Shoreline Management Act, is in the process of updating the Shoreline Master Program through that act to state that that Shoreline Master Plan will not be allowed to protect non-native species. There will be strong language in those plans. Federal agencies, NOAA and NMFS, consider seagrasses as a habitat of special concern, and at the same time, they have an executive order that does not allow for the spread of invasive or noxious plants, which Zostera japonica is classified to be. The petitioner's second reason for giving you this petition is the statement that non-native eelgrass, Zostera japonica, and native eelgrass are virtually serving the same functions in the ecosystem. We do know that Zostera japonica serves some of the same functions as native eelgrass. It provides a three-dimensional structure for the species and habitats that it protects. But it doesn't serve the same function for all species because of its location higher in the intertidal zone. We do know it can adversely affect the ecological functions of mudflats, which do serve as critical habitat for invertebrates. And so the presence of Zostera japonica alters that upper tidal habitat. The petitioner's third reason for making their request is a statement that the claims made by shellfish industry that they've been suffering economic losses due to their inability to cultivate hard shell clams in Willapad Bay as a result of the colonization of Zostera japonica. We did find some citations that supported the shellfish industry's claim that they have on average lost 44% of their reduction in their clam production as a result of not being able to harvest approximately 3,000 acres due to the presence of Zostera japonica. We didn't convert that into economic losses, but it is a significant area in Willapa Bay. The fourth and sixth reasons for the petition being that that Zostera japonica threatens the existence of native eelgrass, and scientists have concerns over efforts to eradicate Zostera japonica. The Department of Ag's Weed Control Board listed Zostera japonica as a Class C noxious weed in 2013. It does not require landowners to remove it, but it does allow the Department of Ecology to issue a permit for amazamox. According to EPA, amazamox is considered to be a reduced risk herbicide, and it's been authorized by that federal agency to be used in marine and estuary environments. It's described as non-toxic to animals, highly water soluble, and adheres poorly to all soil types. That said, the Department of Ecology is in the process of working through the potential of the use of amazamox in Willapa Bay. That NPDES permit has not been issued yet. It's gone through great scrutiny, environmental impact statements, significant public input. There are restrictions that will be placed on the use of amazamox in Willapa Bay if this permit is successful in being issued. Some of those restrictions incur the application will need to occur only at low tide when plants are exposed. There will be a need to maintain a buffer between the application on non-native eelgrass from native eelgrass, of course, in an effort to protect the native grass. And there's a requirement to put in place a monitoring program to assess the impacts. And we will be part of that monitoring team along with ecology, assessing impacts and then working to modify any actions if necessary. And again, we will be looking at impacts to native eelgrass because that is the species that we are protecting. The petitioner's seventh reason for their listing is that the Weed Control Board did not use science to classify Zostera japonica as a Class C noxious weed. We don't know all the reasons for their final decision. We are on record and testified in a number of the Weed Control Board's hearings on this topic. We understood the need to apply some control in Willapa Bay. Our recommendation was to have the classification apply to a small geographic area, particularly Willapa Bay and I think Grays Harbor. And we were strong in our statements that the application of amazamox should be followed by monitoring and adaptive management according to the results that might be found. We were successful on some of our points that we provided in testimony to the Weed Control Board in the monitoring and the adaptive management. We were unsuccessful in maintaining the classification to a small geographic area. The classification currently applies statewide. But permits for use of amazamox, again, would have to go through ecology, and that would be on a applicant-by-applicant basis. As far as politics guiding the decision of the weed board, there was reference to a letter from Director Anderson to Representative Blake. Representative Blake, in February 2011, inquired of our agency why we were protecting non-native eelgrass that was showing negative impacts on the shellfish industry. And our response to Representative Blake was our priority habitat and species tool does not protect, it never has protected, non-native marine vegetation. So in response to his concern, we went back into our priority habitat and species listing and specifically stated that Zostera japonica was not included in our eelgrass protections, that it is a non-native eelgrass. So that that was what Director Anderson's letter to Representative Blake was stating, and it is, I want to underscore, not a change in how we've protected eelgrass through our priority habitat and species listing. And then lastly, the petitioners, their eighth reason for this petition is stating scientific evidence shows that this eelgrass performs vital biological functions in Willapa Bay. And we don't differ in their opinion that there are ecological benefits that Zostera japonica offers in the estuarine habitat. That's why we wanted to the weed control board to limit the classification to a narrow geographic scope, and we wanted monitoring and adaptive management. But we do know Zostera japonica does have some detrimental impacts in the nearshore habitat. And again, the conversion of the mudflat habitat, as I mentioned earlier, is one of those impacts. There's a decrease in green sturgeon feeding habitat as well. And then there is some literature that suggests that Zostera japonica may outcompete native eelgrass in disturbed areas, but that is not a condition that's found everywhere. So that's a summary of what was brought before you and our response to those points. The policy issues that we're bringing to your attention for consideration is to either accept this petition, which would result in us changing the manner that we protect native eelgrasses to include non-native marine vegetation, specifically Zostera japonica, or to deny the petition, of course stating the reasons for the denial. And we would, of course, recommend that there would be specific points made to each of the petitioners' concerns that they brought to your attention. So I think I'll stop there and hear what you have to say.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Very good summary. Very clear and detailed sufficiently. I think we're all well informed now. Does anyone have any questions for Lisa?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I have a question.
Go ahead, Commissioner Mankin.
Yes. Lisa, can you fill in a few more details on the fate and the persistence of...
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear
hello.
You on this end.
Okay.
Hello.
Commissioner,
I can hear you, or I can.
Yeah. Madam Chair, can you understand? Can you hear?
Sure.
I think we've lost.
I think she'll try to call back.
Well, okay. Let me go ahead with the question anyway. Can you describe a little more in a little more detail what the fate, the persistence of imazamox is in the environment once it's released?
Beyond what we said, do you know?
Hi, yeah. This is Randy Carman. I'm certainly not a toxicologist, but with what I've read from the EPA fact sheet, I think Lisa summed it up fairly well. The only additional comment I would have is that imazamox is known to break down in the persistence of light, so the half-life of it is stated to be about 9 hours.
Do we know where it might be concentrated in biological organisms? Are there certain biological organisms known to selectively sequester it?
Has it been used much?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
I dropped off somehow. I don't know what happened. Sorry about that. All of a sudden, there was nothing on the line. That was a first, and I apologize. So, Commissioner Mackin, you were about to make a comment or
I asked for any additional information we might have on the fate and persistence of the herbicide in the environment and whether it was selectively taken up by certain marine organisms.
Okay. Lisa, would you go over your answer?
I think it's
again?
Fair to say we don't know.
Okay.
Would you like us to follow up on that, Commissioner Mankin?
No. I'll talk to you in at a later date on it. It's not a burning issue with me. So.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? I was curious about whether the expansion rate that was depicted for Willapaw and Yukina are also being seen. Those expansion rates were pretty high. Is that what is being seen in Puget Sound, or what's the situation in Puget Sound with Japonica?
Commissioner Wecker, Willapa Bay is the most studied or observed. It's where the largest impact to the shellfish industry has been, so that's where we have most of our information. But we do, because the weed board classified Zostera japonica as a Class C, by classification, that designates that it exists everywhere. To what degree, I don't think we know, because we haven't done as much, or the state hasn't done as much looking. I think, go ahead.
So, hi, this is Randy Carman again. Just a little additional information on that. The largest infestation of Zostera japonica is in Willapa Bay. That's on the entire west coast of North America. That's been documented. Its spread into Puget Sound has occurred in numerous areas. It's located from North Sound to South Sound, including Hood Canal, but at much lower rates. So the theory out there is that it was first introduced to Willapa Bay back in like the 1930s, and that it took a while to get into Puget Sound. So typical for an invasive species, you see a very slow reproductive rate in its initial colonization, but followed by rapid expansion once it becomes established. Doesn't seem like it's become highly established in most areas in Puget Sound yet, but it is there in most locations.
Thanks. You made an important point there, which is that in non-native introductions may change their behaviors over time. They become more invasive in some circumstances, which means that they become more of a nuisance. And that is one of the reasons that in my experience, those who are concerned with protecting native ecosystems try to respond very quickly and early on to any non-native introductions. So early detection and early intervention are one of the mantras in the whole world of controlling non-natives. And from what I've experienced in Willapa Bay, Japonica has become more invasive in the past, say, 5 to 10 years. So it's no wonder to me that the oyster industry's concerns with its impacts on their clam production has increased in the past 10 years. So that's some of my personal experience from living in Pacific County. Anyone else have any comments or questions? If not, we're ready for a motion.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Mankin.
Yes,
I would like to make a motion. I move to deny the petition to protect Zostera japonica from the herbicide imazamox and to list it on the WDF and W priority habitat and species list.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
I think that was Commissioner Schmitten first.
No, it was, I believe, Commissioner Kehoe.
Oh, sorry. Commissioner Kehoe has seconded the motion to deny the petition to protect Zostera japonica from the herbicide imazamox and to list it on the WDFW priority habitat species list. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion carries. The petition is denied. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Terrific job. I don't know if I thanked Steve earlier, but if I didn't,